Podcast with me, your host, Stephanie O'Quigley. This is an interview with Irish woman, Caroline Wilkins, who resides here on Manhattan's Lower East Side. After years of touring Ireland with her father's blues band, Caroline decided to move to New York in pursuit of her dreams. On her arrival, Manhattan was much harder than she thought. Caroline was diagnosed with an unfortunate illness and found herself with a little more spare time than usual. She used her energy to start creating unique pieces, and her business, Sticky Back Bailey, was found. Caroline now designs and handmakes jewellery for customers worldwide. Caroline sat down with me in her Lower East Side apartment and chatted about the highs and the lows of this journey. This might come as a surprise, but starting a business in Manhattan at such a young age wasn't easy. Caroline was honest, candid, and just so genuine. If you're interested in starting a business, this episode is for you. Again, thank you for tuning in. I appreciate all the returns, and I'll talk to you on the next one. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I think I've only met you in person once.
Yeah, so this time last year, I think, was it?
Was it?
I think it was at the jewellery show.
Show, yeah. It's crazy. And it was like, when I met you, it was like, you were one of those people, I think it was literally for only 5 minutes, and I was like, I remember meeting you. Like, I remember just the energy or something, like,
really?
Just from meeting you, yeah.
That's fun. I had the same impression, and I was really delighted when, like, you suggested, like, let's stay in touch.
Yeah.
And weirdly, we've just kind of like followed each other along.
Yeah.
And I just love following you. I love, like, yeah, I really do. Like, I really enjoy it, like, you
Aww.
Know. And I think you're bringing a lot to the table. I think it's, you know, really
I'm a bit, like, silly at times, but it's all in the aid of fun.
That's what I love.
So, Caroline, we're both here on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and both trying to do our thing in New York City. Can you tell me a bit about, just to start off, can you tell me a bit about, you know, after college and how that time went for you and how kind of, I suppose, you ended up here in New York?
Yeah, I went to college for business and marketing and business recreation and leisure. So I did the rec and leisure first and then went on to do marketing. And I always thought marketing was like, exciting and creative in itself, but I shouldn't have done it the first time round, and I sort of knew that when I was going through college, and I ignored it anyway. I was singing with my dad's band, and extremely nervous, like, beforehand all the time, but still kind of pushed myself through because it helped me once I did it. And once I finished college, I had the opportunity to go to England and study a master's in exercise and nutrition science.
Okay.
And I got a call from a band that I had been following with my dad since I was about 12 or 13. And he would sneak me into bars there down in Clonakilty if they were doing a gig there, because it's a bit more easygoing for a young one to be like sneaking in. So I got the call from them. And the first time I went out to see them, they said I looked too young for the part. And then the second...
You were singing with your dad?
I was singing,
on gigs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, yeah. I was singing with my dad. He's in a classic rock band. And he's got an acoustic band on the side as well. So I was singing blues, specifically blues, with them, because that was what kind of, like, kicked me in the guts, sort of a thing. I just, you know, really, like, was a very real reaction to the blues since I was like a toddler, or maybe a little bit older. So I was singing the blues, and then I was supposed to go to do this master's, and I got the call from a band who had met me a few years before but said that I looked too young for the part, because they were all like, maybe
I just told you look mad young before. You have that look of you.
Oh, dude. Back of the net.
She's like honing in on that. She's like, let me just have that comment.
Grabbing onto that one for dear life. But so I got the call and I went out to audition for this blues band, or kind of a soul band really, and they took me. Couldn't believe they took me. I was probably younger by about 10 years at least, and then, like, there was, you know, so I didn't really know what they were doing with me in the band, but I learned so much. They sort of dragged me up as such, in terms of from the level I was.
I think like that they really taught me a lot, and I was super grateful for it. So I didn't go to do the masters because they were like a professional band, like and I stayed with them for 3 years, and I thought, you know, something's not adding up for me. I wasn't able to, like, in my dad's band I could like go wherever I wanted with a song, and in this band it was exactly like a copy of an original, and I just felt like I was never going to be able to sing it as good as the original anyway. So I just kind of felt
it didn't fulfill your creativity.
Like it hits all the spots in terms of like learning. The banter was unbelievable, just going to these different gigs. I made a fortune for my age at the time, and I don't think
on paper it looked like a great experience.
Yeah, and it was, like, I'm still blown away that they took me. Like, even if I went back to sing with them now, I probably still feel like I wasn't, you know, at the level or whatever. And I didn't care. I was just there and I was having a great time. But something, it wasn't even that specifically. It was just my all around life wasn't adding up to. I just wasn't feeling like excited about anything. And I'd went through kind of a really, really, like, I suppose it was a period of like depression really for a few years. And I realized afterwards it was from like not honoring the creative part of myself. And a lot of people didn't know about this, like it was a very private thing. So I did decide this morning when I knew I was coming on this, I said that I would be as honest as possible.
Good.
So there's that.
Well, we're here for the honesty.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, you know, it's definitely a treat to be asked to talk about Sticky Back Bailey. It's something extremely, like, special to me, and it's all very honest. Like, it all feels very pure and honest. So I kind of want to...
That's what has resonated with me when I met you, and... that's literally, I know we had a like conversation for a while before we started press record, but that's really what, like, I wanted to talk about, is like the honesty. And like, I hope you don't take this as an insult, but it's jewelry.
Yeah,
but it's not the jewelry. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
It's not the jewelry, like, you know, and the jewelry is great in itself for you know, for what it is, but it's more than the jewelry. And I suppose that's really what I'm interested in, how you got to the point where you were able to delve into something so creative and you know, like, evolve with yourself to come to that point where it was, you know, you're channeling yourself and your energy in that way.
Yeah, and you're right. I don't take it as an insult at all. I think that the jewellery, like I said to you a while ago, like, you, like... jewelry isn't life changing, you know. It's a material thing, but it's the creative process and sort of the art of it all, the ability and the allowance to express myself in a way that I could never do vocally. I could never articulate it very well at the time.
Yeah.
And even when I was singing, I started to write when I came over here to America, but I'll get to that in a minute. But I found it much easier to, I suppose, express myself this time round through physical objects, and which is why I went back to school to actually like solder, carve, melt. That's what I'm doing now, because I need to do it even at a further level again.
Yeah,
like, it's just exploding out of me, and it needs to take some form. Like, you know, and I know that sounds like madness, but
yeah,
I really like creatively want to express myself.
Yeah,
and the way that the jewelry came around was, each piece that I made, like, I mean, it was like an elation afterwards. It was, you know, and it was expressing something in myself at the time emotionally that I really wanted to express, like sensuality. Like, I started to go through this thing where I felt much more comfortable in myself as a woman, as we were talking about earlier. I wanted, when I first started, like, I remember seeing this tiny, dainty chain, nothing else attached to it, and it wasn't even a necklace, it was just chain, right? And it was so small, I put it up against the skin, and it's like it melted into the skin. It was like it belonged to the skin. And I started, not that I started, I've always seen the body, the female body, skin, like, so in such a beautiful light. And then being able to make jewellery and express sensuality, which was really prominent for me at the time, it was really important for me to feel that.
Yeah.
that's kind of like where I was at that time, and I started to find crystals and look into the meaning of them, see how I felt about that. Did I feel that that was honest? You know, if they like meditated on them and stuff like that, because I do practice. So things like that, that it became much more than just a piece of jewelry. It became a way to express myself. And then when other people started to ask me for it, I was like so blown away. I couldn't believe it. And they would wear it because it was one of a kind. Like they would
people
send...
feel that special because all your pieces are one of a kind. It's very special to the person.
Well, it's like a person styling themselves, or like you know, if you've got a very gothic look to yourself, or if you decide to buy this certain I don't know, chain, or if you decide to wear your hair a certain way, how you feel on that day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so much bigger than a hairstyle. It's so much bigger. You're putting yourself out into the world and you're trying to express something about yourself. And I find that with a lot of, like, I'm deeply interested in fashion. I love it. But all of that and the way people put things together you're trying to express something. And also, I have the same amount of love for people who just don't care in the morning and will throw anything on. They're expressing something in a different way, surely, you know?
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Agree.
Yeah, because it's all, it's all relative. And this is just my journey. And I love if someone sees something and gets a kick out of it. Like, I remember the very first time I went to that jewellery class.
Mm-hmm.
I got it on Groupon, and I really needed, I was working on like kind of respecting myself and honouring myself creatively again. And I went out, and I remember the first time I saw that chain.
Mm-hmm.
And I had felt like a numbness in terms of excitement for the longest time. And then I saw this like dainty chain, and just like, it was like a flood of like ideas and excitement
mm-hmm.
came into my head. It was like a wave of it that I hadn't felt in the longest time. I was going out having the crack and all that, but still sort of felt sort of a bit numb creatively. And I'm sure people feel it, but in so many different ways. But for me, like, I went home like definitely full that evening. I was out in Brooklyn, and I walked around for a while. I was buzzing. I was absolutely buzzing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what I've noticed, and what I hope for when people see something, that it gives them an old kick.
Yeah.
And
you can pass that realization and that energy onto them as well, and that they will feel some part of that as well.
Yeah, like I think that everything's energy.
Yeah.
And I know that you know, people are in different places about that
mm-hmm.
that belief, but you know, I really do believe that, you know, if you're open, and I think that energy will flow like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's my hope and my intention too while I'm making them.
Yeah.
Like, I really am. Music is tied into it a lot. I'm in a really beautiful place while making these things.
That's always going to resonate with people, you know.
Yeah.
So talk to me about just going back before, because you mentioned a little bit about how you were, the headspace that you were in before you started creating Sticky Back the bloopers. Sticky Back Daily. Like, you were, we were talking about not honoring yourself to your, like, your truth, and, you know, people told us we were going to be nurses or teachers or, you know, whatever was the course, you know, that after the Leaving Cert was available to you. And talk to me about that period and where your head was at from a mental health standpoint before you created, before you launched the business. So it was 4 years ago. So how did it come to a point where, you know, what was going on in your life, and how did you feel mentally before you had this like realization and you went to the class in Brooklyn?
I suppose, well, I mentioned like I went through that 3 year bout of like, it was serious, like it wasn't, you know, I mean, to describe it, I would use the word black. It was, you know. So I dedicated myself into looking into that, and really like, I wasn't accepting that I was going to be stuck there for life, but it really did feel like that at the time.
Yeah.
And when I finally started to come out of it, I moved to Toronto.
Okay.
And I did had a blues band there, and had a couple of like compromising situations, I suppose, before the blues band took off, that kind of knocked my confidence in terms of expressing myself through music. And then I Loved my life in Toronto. I had a lovely set of beautiful friends and a beautiful apartment, but always knew I'd end up in New York. I knew it from about 6 years of age, like.
That's
and Kira,
so
yeah.
Crazy. What, how long were you in Toronto for?
2.5 years.
Okay.
And I would have extended it if my visa allowed, like I tried, and
yeah.
then it didn't work out for me, so I went home for a month, and that I knew I couldn't stay at home for more than a month. I just knew I was supposed to be in New York.
When you left Toronto, did you, were you kind of, you know, I have to go home, like I'm going to kind of set up in Ireland, or was it like, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to leave here, and like, how am I going to like live a life in Ireland? Like, was it a kind of a shock for you and tough journey home, or was it kind of just, oh, my visa's up now, like I'll
that it's like
tip on home? Like.
Yeah, no, it was actually like the opposite. It was like a huge body blow, as my dad calls it, you know. It was like I had applied and done all the right things for my visa, and the lawyer
to
I
stay,
got had
yeah.
so many people on his case. He actually came back to me 6 months after when I'd set up my life in New York, and said, oh, there's this, you know, and it didn't work out for me, and I found out I was kind of ripped out of the situation, really. It was
yeah.
really, it wasn't traumatic, that was be a bit, I wouldn't describe it that way. It was kind of, Jesus Christ, what is happening? Like,
yeah,
I have this entire life here, and only for my best friend it had happened to the year before.
Yeah.
I was sort of like, well, just rise to the occasion now, like, and I always think when something like this happens, that it's a teacher, or it's a teaching point for you. I won't say I always have, I've learned that.
Yeah.
And I sort of opened up to accepting that it was like a learning thing, as shite as it was.
Yeah.
And it really was, like, I mean, I'd say to this day, most of my stuff that existed in that lifetime that I was there,
yeah.
it's still there in some basement. I literally had to take two suitcases, you know, and
yeah.
I had to say goodbye really quickly over a week or two, and I went home. I wanted to honour the visa I was on and stuff, and then I came back to Cork and sort of took a month to digest it, and spent a bit of time. My mum and dad have a place by the sea that our nana left us, and I spent a bit of time there kind of for a while,
yeah.
before meeting
like?
Anyone else. It was weird, like, it was,
yeah.
you know, because my life was there
in Toronto, yeah.
everything I knew was there, and I knew it wasn't going to be forever, because I remember touching down in Toronto being all excited, but also being a small bit disappointed coming in on the bus from the airport. I was there for 2.5 years, and I remember thinking, oh, it's a bit clean, like, that's a bit shiny there now.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, I like the grit.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see, like, graffiti and
culture.
And, I wanted to see that the streets were, like, lived in and stuff like that, and I finally did find my places, like, Queen Street West and Kensington and a bit in Ossington and stuff like that. I did find areas where I felt at home. Particularly in some music venues, like, they would have been the reason where I flipped or turned the corner and been like, this is fucking amazing, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd always kind of do that anyway. I like to try and find myself at home
yeah.
in places, if I can, like, it's not always easy, but then when I got home, I took the time to think about everything, and I knew that I was going to go to New York.
So you were contemplating with your sisters about kind of moving back, and then you came over for holiday, and you know, you had probably a blast.
Yeah, you know, New York.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and I had actually spent a bit of time catching a few gigs around as well, and I just thought, even though I feel my musical experience in Toronto seemed like I found a lot more of an organic scene, when I got to New York, it took me a while to find that here.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? But it wasn't even that, it was like the streets, like,
yeah,
the feeling. And I think a lot of people say this about New York: when you get here, you're either one way or the other, and the one way being you feel electric,
yeah,
and the other is this isn't for me, and there's no in between.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Isn't it like Marmite?
Yeah,
you know, like, isn't that what they say? You either like it or you don't.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is like. And as that happened, or just beforehand, I had gotten really sick. But in the lead up to that, I was working like insane hours. I wasn't doing anything kind of to honor myself creatively. It was like I was literally pushing it under a carpet. It was like, no, you're here now, make the money, live this life, do this experience. But I'd always leave something like a musical gig or like an art show or something feeling like frustrated, or I'd feel really empowered at the start and like, oh, that was so amazing, and then I'd be like, oh, what am I doing, like and I think a lot of people feel like that here. It's easy to get caught up in
work,
New York lifestyle, and work, and you're having a ball and you're out and your the banter is amazing and cracks unreal, and then you're looking back and you're like, yeah, what am I doing? And not in terms of career for me really, but in terms of like, what am I giving back here to myself? Am I respecting myself? And I wasn't asking any of these questions. I was just like kind of on auto mode and
plowing ahead, like,
plowing ahead, sure, you don't get a minute.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant, but like sometimes if you know that you're supposed to be like, it wasn't that I knew, it was like there was no denying it. Like I needed to get it out of me, this creative. I can't for all the world just describe it like properly without sounding like a complete fairy, like,
yeah,
but
no,
it's like,
I understand.
Do you know what I mean? It was like a pain in my throat, like when I would talk about not being able to address this like burst of creativity. It's just, it's like gonna a pot that's gonna like overflow by boiling, you know. So I obviously didn't address it, and then I got really sick, like you know, my health in so many ways, like had problems with my ovaries. A couple of them burst a few times, and and to be honest, I think it's a pretty common problem for women. I don't mind talking about it. I think it's important to talk about it and to stay on top of that area of your health, which I obviously hadn't. And then when they went to investigate that, they found like abnormal cells, which is again really normal, and they gave me this medication. I don't really take medication for anything, so it ripped like the lining of my stomach. Not very medical expression now, I'm sure people could explain it a bit better, but I got an ulcer from the stress of all of it, you know. So on the outside, or like my mom and dad did say, it was like a swan, everything looked great, swanning along, grand, but underneath it's like fuck, you know, just like going 90. So I felt like, what the hell is going on? And on top of that, I didn't have insurance, and the whole thing, I mean, talk about body blows. Things are coming at me financially, health wise, emotionally. I wasn't doing music anymore.
You weren't
honoring
yourself
in any way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just
felt, you'd come to New York, you know, which is a city that is kind of ready to kind of like open you up in every way possible and make you super vulnerable, or like make you, you know, it kind of pushes you around and like, you know, whatever. And I have said this, and I think everybody has their like New York story. It's like New York broke me to pieces and shoved them right back in my face.
Yeah.
And it was up to me to put them together. And it seems like what you're saying is exactly what happened. It just broke you to pieces and just shoved them in your face.
Yeah. And but it like took 2 years to kind of get there. Like in that 2 years or so, I knew that I should be doing more to honor myself, because I know myself. I'm super sensitive, and I used to, when I was younger, see that as a bad thing.
Yeah.
But now I see it as this tremendous gift, you know. Provided I know like how to harness sensitivity. So I knew that I was sort of plodding along, and that I was supposed to be doing a certain thing and ignoring it all. I wasn't meditating the way I would have been.
Yeah.
I wasn't like paying attention to the overall picture of things.
Yeah. Which is work. It takes work and it takes time, and you have to be willing to put that into
yourself. You've got to set that time aside in the day. And you know, we were just chatting about it a while ago in New York, like it's like brushing your teeth. You have to brush your teeth, you have to cut your grass. You know what I mean? Like and that's kind of what it was. I wasn't cutting my grass, I wasn't in the way that was important to me. So I sort of, when I got sick like that, I mean, I put it in a nutshell there, but it really was quite like
I can imagine.
Yeah, and the expense of it and the fear, you know, of being here without, I mean, it's just outrageous over here. And
health insurance.
Yeah, and that it was an ongoing thing, right? Mm. So I had to keep going back. Like, I ended up going to like an outpatient hospital in the end because it was just like, and I remember thinking, what the hell is going on here? Mm. Like,
yeah.
It was coming, I had went through a breakup at the time shortly afterwards, and I was like, Jesus, what? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, from all angles. And,
yeah.
And I was sort of like, I have to address this. Like,
yeah.
Obviously my background, like I told you, my mum and dad, like, they're deeply spiritual, like they run a Tai Chi school, so I would have grown up with phrases like out of alignment, right?
Yeah.
But they're very they really insist that you take what sits with you and leave what doesn't. Like, no one can tell you what's the right way of living and et cetera, et cetera. So
yeah.
Out of alignment had come across in a bunch of books that I was kind of applying myself to in terms of turning this whole situation around, and I was like, yeah, what does that mean, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I started to realize over time and reading up on different things, spirituality, like energy wise and stuff, that I wasn't respecting or honoring myself. I wasn't taking the time to
listen to yourself,
just listen,
look inside.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the looking back in it now, like, I was so afraid of looking at the darkest parts of myself, I didn't turn the flashlight inwards for
mm-hmm.
fear of what I'd find,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that was the end of that. And I was going to do a few things for myself.
Mm-hmm.
One was do everything I could to address all the parts of myself maybe that had come up that I didn't like, and kind of accept and make friends with them. I really am sharing here.
That's it. And that, you say that in one sentence about you addressing stuff that you're not happy with or you're insecure about, and that is just a huge ordeal to get over, to kind of take on.
Well, do you know what, at the start,
as you were saying earlier, we tend to suppress those things and just keep pushing them down and down and down, you know, and hoping that they'll just disappear or kind of take care of themselves.
I'm sure it's only making things worse.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like, it didn't do me any good. I knew that straight away, and it started off being completely frightening looking at those parts of myself, you know. This is now on a, like, I suppose, emotional level, which is stuff that came up for me through sort of the freak out of being so sick, like, what the fuck's going on,
mm-hmm.
you know. And obviously where I was at that point in time with other personal things that were going on. So I decided, no, I have to, like, kind of, I like to use the phrase, grow a pair of ovaries, like, really kind of, like stand up to this, rise to the occasion. And it was awful at the start, but I start now, like, when a teacher or a teaching comes my way, it's fucking shite.
Yeah.
But I definitely embrace it.
Yeah.
It might take me a little while to realize that it's a teacher, because I'd be so stubborn I wouldn't accept that.
Yeah.
And it comes in the form of a human or a situation. You know what I mean?
And all they want to do is, like, punch somebody.
Yeah, just punch them in the face. But
don't we all?
It's all coming out now, you know, like. But that's being a human being, you know, like. And it happens quite a few times a week, I think, for many of us. And it's kind of my biggest challenge the last few years is, like, probably, like, slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
And when I react to something, like, what's this reaction about? Like, because it's clearly my problem. It's not the other, you know. So after I got sick like that, and I kind of started to turn the boat around, sort of a thing, I started to look at things. That was one of the other decisions I made, was to look at things that gave me peace of mind.
Yeah.
Because I was doing nothing like that for myself, which is just ridiculous when I think about it. So I was like, I'm going off now. I'm going to try everything. I'm not going to stop until I find something that lights the fire in my belly.
Yeah.
You know, as cheesy as it sounds.
It's just so important.
Yeah.
It's just so true. It's so true and so important. And if you're not consistently... either, or there's the sirens, and every single podcast is a siren. All right. It's just so, like, to do something that lights a fire in your belly is just it's the most important thing that you'll do.
You know,
it's the most important thing that you'll take on and that you'll do, because there's so many repercussions for not honoring that or being self-aware enough to know that that's important.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And you put it in a nutshell there. Like,
yeah.
That's exactly it. It's sort of, I mean, it's so easy to get into just kind of plodding along, which is what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I can't.
And doing things by the book or how they're supposed to be, or
yeah.
I'm doing this because it's what you do. Like, it's not, that's not the answer. Like, you
yeah.
have to have a deeper why, or you have to have a deeper reason why you're doing something, you know, and,
exactly.
and be able to answer that question.
Yeah, like the whole reason I went to college to study business and marketing or business, because I thought,
yeah,
you know, that's what I should be doing.
Yeah.
You know, you finish school, you go to college.
Yeah.
And what I should have been doing is bouncing around with a load of bands and
yeah.
living until I figured out where I needed the further learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finally at the point now, like, where I've been making the jewellery and it's given me all this joy, and the ideas in my head can't become a reality until I learn further skills. And
mm-hmm.
that's why I'm back learning, like, soldering and the whole lot. But these are the things, like, that I really need to express
mm-hmm.
to people. I don't really do that because I don't like to shove, you know, what I found onto other people. But in this situation, I couldn't recommend enough, like, just deciding to take the time to do a few things, even if it's like going for a walk or something, to that gives you an old kick in the guts.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And
it's
I use
gratitude as well, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gratitude.
Like, there's little, the stupid little things that, like, I see or do on a daily basis, like, and I'm so grateful for the stupidest things. Like,
yeah.
And I shouldn't say stupid, because that's not true, but, like, even this morning, like, this is the way of the fairies talk, as we're like, but even this morning, like, I woke up and, like, it was 7 a.m. It's a Saturday morning. Like, my family are healthy. Like, I have so many friends around me. I'm, like, you know, figuring stuff out for myself. And I looked, like, I don't have any curtains, which is kind of strange, actually, now that I think about it.
Do you wear, like, an eye mask?
No, I just don't.
My God.
I am so fucking tired. I just can't get it. But I have curtains, but they're very, like, light, and I just keep them open. But, like, I just, like, rolled over and I, like, looked at the sky and I just could see straight outside, and it was just a pure blue sky. And there's a tree that grows across my window, and it was this, like, tree that, like, was, the leaves were really green and the sky was so blue, and I was just like. I don't, like, this is just great, like, you know. And
yeah.
it sounds so like, come on, you know, but, like, it's,
no,
just
it's class,
you have
yeah.
to be, you have to be present and be aware of those things, and, like, little things like that, you know, even listen to a song that you love and you're just like, fucking love this song, you know what I mean, like, or a lyric or something, and you're just so grateful to be able to kind of listen to the song, or to be able to wake up, or to be able to say, I'm in my bed, I'm safe, I'm happy. And it's just so important to kind of take time to do those things and hold them with you every day.
Yeah. And that's, like, that's absolutely gorgeous. Like, it really is.
So,
like,
cheesy.
You know, but it's funny, because I do know that there are some, I know for me, right, I would have been in situations, I suppose, particularly in that darker time when I was younger, that people would say that, you know, you have to be present and be grateful,
and you can't just say, oh, I need to be present. It doesn't resonate
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, it takes time, right?
Yeah.
And then you get to the point where it's kind of like where you were today.
Yeah.
But when you first hear that, I remember being a bit, like, kind of pissed off or whatever, because I was like, oh, I can't. But what I realize is, I putting yourself in the right situations to where you can be more open to feeling like that, or honoring yourself to, like, for example, you moved to New York and you woke up feeling excited by that after
yeah.
going through what sounds like it a hell of a time, right?
Yeah.
But to be able to turn around a couple of years later and have that experience in the morning, like,
yeah.
is mind blowing, and the goal, it's really gorgeous
mm-hmm.
and very exciting to hear. And it's very exciting to hear, having been on both sides of it, like, I'm sure you were yourself. Like,
mm-hmm.
I was on the side of it where people would say that to me and I'd be like, oh, fuck off. Like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But then I'm on the side of it where now I walk down the street, like, and a fire escape gets me excited. The reason I moved to the East Village was because my head was buzzing with excitement just because of this graffiti and this the streets and everything. And but it wasn't, it was work, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And not hard work, just or maybe hard, I suppose it was harder times.
But
you know, I think that it's when you know like that the outcome will be good, you know, by looking at those things or spending a bit of extra attention or time on that detail of like respecting yourself and looking at the things that are making you unhappy or looking at the things that might make you happy, you don't know, you have to try them. They allow for moments like that where you are in a better place energetically.
Mm-hmm.
If you do
the work to get that to that point, like I heard a quote today, if you do the hard things, your life will be easy. So if you do the work to get to that point of self-awareness and gratitude and, you know, kind of thinking a little bit deeper and honoring yourself, if you do the work to get to, because to your point, it's hard work to get to that point, your life will be easier, you know, and things won't upset you as much. And you kind of, your head is in a different place and you kind of think of things differently and you're grateful for more things. You know, and it's just, it makes life much easier.
Yeah.
You know, it makes life much easier. Like, you know, at that point when I was in bed this morning, like, it didn't really, I wasn't thinking about what I was going to do that day. I wasn't thinking about, like, God, like, you know, what things did I say to people last night? Or, like, God, what did they those people think of me last night when I was out and about? Or, like, you know, I just woke up and I was just there in my bed and I was present, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was just, it kind of, it makes your life, it just makes the day, like, better, you know? And,
big
and
time.
It, that snowballs as well because you continue to grow in that way and then you'll walk down the street and you'll see somebody and, you know, you'll get a bit inspiration from somebody and... You know, I suppose that comes with living in New York as well. But yeah, it all adds up, you know. It adds up to your frame of mind.
And the gratitude is a really interesting one too.
Yeah.
I really do like...
And again, it's a word that people throw around until you really
are
grateful.
Yeah.
Then you can really understand the
meaning. And it's not always easy, you know, and like on certain days to wake up and remind yourself to be...
Yeah.
Grateful, you know what I mean?
Especially when you've been in the, or you are in the dark time, or you are, things aren't like really, just your health is not well, or you have bad relationships or something, like when things are just genuinely shit, which they can be, it's very hard to wake up and think of the positives, you know?
Yeah. But it, once you start, I definitely find it helps, you know?
So to get back to your business and what you do, can you tell people a little bit about Sticky Black Bailey and like just rationally, like what it is you do? You make jewelry, but how do you make it and what makes you different, and that, you know, what your pieces are like and where you sell them and what kind of different you know, things you've, exciting things that you've done that you would kind of say, oh, I've done that with my business, or, you know, we've done that. And what kind of, like, makes you smile and proud?
I'm proud. Jesus, funny. I don't know if I've had much time, like, to be proud or yeah. I suppose I am. I'm proud that I'm at a point now where I don't mind really, like, how they're received, because...
Because
I just need to make them.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. And then the fact that people... actually really like them, and there's a positive, that's lovely.
It's a bonus.
Oh, it's a bonus, exactly. Yeah. I don't really mind, because I have this rule that, like, if I wouldn't wear it, or if it doesn't feel like I'm mad about it, I will take it apart.
Yeah.
Not kind of a rule, I made a piece there before I went off to All Together Now Festival, and I wore it in work in Tom and Jerry's, and I had the bracelet on, but I had made it that morning. I really wanted to wear pyrite crystal that day. And it was this cool bracelet, but I put some vintage beads in there that I had found in a thrift store the day before, and I didn't take enough time to see if the piece sat with me and how I felt about it.
Yeah.
And I wore it during the day, and I just finished it because I wanted it finished, and it was annoying me so much.
Yeah.
I was pissed off at myself for making it. Like, I had to take it off and put it in my pocket. I was so annoyed that it felt like dishonest. I wanted to make another piece. And I wanted to have, like, a model of something that I would maybe add to the collection later. Uh-huh. And I wore it, and that's kind of, like, the precedent across all the pieces that I make. Like, I have literally went to bed after making a piece and woken up 2 hours later because it was bothering me. Like,
So every piece is kind of, it sounds like it's an energy of yours, and that if the energy is not right, that it just doesn't sit with you.
I suppose that the way that it started was a way to like express myself, as we spoke about, right? And I think, how do you explain it now? I suppose I only make one of everything, and I started out of like selfish reasons. I couldn't find what I wanted in shops.
Yeah.
And I had went to this one jewellery class and thought I knew everything, right? And then I'd see something that I wanted. I was really like inspired, obviously, by the Lower East Side in the East Village, a lot by like wood, feathers, leather, and this really like kind of bohemian type vibe, right? And I started making these pieces, and everything was super honest, like, and then other people wanted to buy them, and obviously they were resonating with them. But it did get to the point, like I was talking about there, that I would maybe have to make a collection and a certain amount of pieces. And there, that piece I was speaking about, I would have made, but it wasn't made with the same energy as the rest of them were made. It was made on, it was made out of pressure.
Yeah.
And it was finished, and it was like a nice piece.
Yeah.
Nice piece of jewelry.
Yeah, but you don't want to sit with the feeling of pressure on your wrist all day or your neck.
It wasn't even that. It just wasn't honest. It was just dishonest.
Yeah.
And I can't really explain that. It probably sounds ludicrous, but I was just looking at this piece that I made and claiming, like, is my heartfelt work that I put my heart and soul into, and it was just bullshit.
Mm.
And the same about the piece on the desk, like, this is, I'm putting these out there because they're helping me bring me to a beautiful place creatively.
But you're self-aware enough to know that it's not honest, and that's why it doesn't sit with you. It's not okay with you.
Yeah,
because it's not
maybe
your truth.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. I hadn't really thought into it. I was just like, no, that's not going to fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I literally took it apart, like, there and then. And when I got home, I didn't actually take apart that bracelet. I just hid it somewhere, or I might have just let it get lost, you know. And it sounds like, I'm aware that it probably sounds ridiculous, but that's how I feel about this process for myself. And if people want to know what sticky back veil is, like, that's the truth.
Yeah.
And I really want to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And I think that only making one of everything, it just means so much to me, because I know that it's belongs to one person once it gets there.
Yeah.
And it's
each
just
different piece has a different truth to it. And
and a lot of the stuff before, I've only done like 4 collections. And I suppose you asked me what I might be proud of. I don't know if I'd be proud of it, but more shocked and like overwhelmed with like gratitude would be when the first collection I did was for Raw Artists. I don't know if I told you, but they found me through a hashtag right at the end of that kind of difficult time with my health.
Yeah.
And I had just started making these pieces. I didn't have a collection. I didn't have a business.
Yeah.
Like, I started it 4 years ago, but I only launched the business last year, like, online. And other than that, everything was super underground. And I believe that actually fed into the energy of it, because people, especially in New York,
they love that
underground
thing.
And it just started to spread through the bars. All different barmaids that I knew were wearing them. And they were taking pictures and, like, sending them to me and just looking stunning.
Yeah.
Like, and it was so exciting to me, because it just started to like catch on, but people really, like, you know, it just, it became something different for me. I don't know if they've like felt that too, but it was like, and people would have said it to me. It was just a really lovely, like, creative feeling for something that really you would never expect to be that lovely. It's like you said, it's jewelry, right? It was just gorgeous, like, and I started to like put it up on my Instagram, and then people were like, or on Snapchat first, and I was getting like a rake of people messaging me through it, and such support. And then I put it on my Instagram, and within the first like month or two, someone from LA who worked for Raw Artists, which is an organization that's based around in Los Angeles, but it's runs around the world. They have these shows for artists, and they raise funds to support local artists and stuff like that. So they had asked me to be in the show or whatever, and I said, yeah, grand.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing really what I was in for. And they were like, oh, do you have a collection? And I was like, yeah, no collection. Like,
you're like, I can make a collection.
I was like 5 weeks beforehand. I remember I didn't sleep. I was like rocking back and forth in between work and stuff. But I made a collection of like 50 odd pieces and or maybe 40 odd pieces. And on the night it was all set up gorgeous, like, and it was me. It was me across the board. A super selfish thing, like, it was just, and I honestly didn't care, like, I say I didn't care, but you're building up and building up to sell these pieces. And then you're
nice if somebody said they were nice.
Yeah, of course. The old ego there needed a stroking, I realised.
What do you think?
Go on, do you like it?
You do, don't you?
Tell me I'm great. But then I started to like look at that as time went on and be like, do you know, that's not really what it's about. And and on the night, I remember looking at the pieces, hoping that they wouldn't sell.
Yeah.
So I could keep it and wear it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting. And then I did sell like a bunch, but what I was expecting was like people, but that was my first experience of people going to these things, don't buy on the spot, right?
Yeah.
And it was a huge learning experience because literally I'm shooting in the dark, like I'm just putting one foot in front of the other, and it, because I know how much it means to me, I guess the fear isn't really there as much as it would be for other things,
because it's so truthful.
I believe so, or it's sort of a case of like I just like the stuff so much that if it doesn't go anywhere, sure, I'll keep it for myself and be delighted.
It'll
mean something to me.
It's so nice.
It's great. It's a nice old feeling. And then so about over that time, a girl who worked with my sister, who lives here and now works here, she said to my sister, can you ask Caroline, can she do a show out in Queens? And I was like, what do you mean, what's the show? And she was actually going to run the show for just my jewellery, like raw artists. I was just one of five artists in the jewellery section who was picked in New York, so that was huge for me. But this is a girl who, out of her own time, wanted to run a night so that I would bring my pieces to a bar out in Queens, and she would invite everyone. Like, all I had to do was focus on the jewellery. She advertised for it, and I couldn't believe how, like, she's such a sweetie, this girl, but she did that for me because she loved the pieces so much. She wanted an opportunity to see them all and to buy them for herself. And
she was like, you know, you have to work.
You
have to make all these pieces.
And that was like after the raw artist thing, I remember feeling a bit deflated, right? Because I built up and built up and I had something to work towards. And then afterwards,
it was like, it's over now.
That's that. And I didn't have a website. And the thought of getting a website just scared the shit out of me. Like, I just thought, oh no, that's way too professional. Sure, I don't have a clue what I'm doing. The only thing I know what I'm doing is the jewellery, right?
To make the jewellery,
And that's kind of all I want to know. But unfortunately, like, you have to do all the other stuff. So I went out to Queens that night and they asked me to make a speech. And I had prepared myself for that sort of deflating feeling, like, oh, you know, you will have a bunch of stuff left now tomorrow and you can work on how you're going to let people see them and stuff. And I went out and I just stood up and told them the truth of how it started and how it came from a place where I wanted to do something to honor myself and that I thought that was important. And I just told the truth. I didn't like prepare, and
you didn't probably need to prepare anything to say.
Well, I didn't know I'd have to make a speech, you know. And
so there was no preparation.
And like, I was, thank God I didn't know, because in this situation, like, I was bucketing it last night, like, knowing that I had this today.
Oh my god, I feel bad for putting you through that.
No, sure, I said yes, you know, which would be something a few years ago I wouldn't have done, you know. So I'm delighted I did, you know. But, and it was something that I needed to do, because I want people to understand, you know, the ground
story,
the grounding of it. So the collection, long story short, sold out on the night. 52 pieces, and they're not cheap, you know, for people who are just coming out and having a few beers. Like, the whole, I think I had four pieces out of the, it was 56 pieces, four pieces I put on sale because they were from the previous collection, which was actually a bit silly for me to do, I realized afterwards, because nothing had changed about the product, but I just felt like that was something I had to do. But those were the ones that didn't sell. And everything else, I actually went down to the bathroom and had a ball for myself. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, you know, this is incredible. And then got a few custom orders too, and I said to it, like, they're my jam, like custom orders, like making something especially for somebody, like just is the best thing ever, you know. And it's like you collaborate with them, like they tell you stuff about themselves, their personality, you know, how they want to express themselves. Like it doesn't really matter what they tell you, and you never know if what you make will be kind of good enough. But it's just a lovely thing, you know.
A lovely experience,
There's no real pressure with it. It's just really nice, you know.
Yeah.
So that was definitely a really cool moment. I came home kind of with an empty suitcase of stuff. And then the other one, I suppose, this website thing, like, you know the way some people couldn't get up and speak in front of a crowd?
I mean,
it would literally make them want to vomit.
Yeah.
I felt like that about building a website. I'm just
makes
not,
you want to vomit.
Yeah, I just I'm not technically minded. These are not strengths that I have. I know this about myself. Caroline, take a back seat here. It's not for you. But I really wanted to be hands-on, and I wanted sort of myself and my intention again to come across on the website. And finally I bit the bullet last year after actually the time that I met you at that show we were at. I knew that it was time to make, I had a bunch of pieces that I would like people to see and I would like people to own, and I made the website. It took me about 2.5 months longer than it would any person. Like, oh my god.
But you did it.
I did it, and at the end of the year, I was knackered. I had a busy old Christmas between working in the bar and doing that, and I remember for the first time in years having a new year. You know, people put up these posts and they're like, oh, it's an unbelievable year and everything's so happy, but New Year's can be quite like a different time for everyone. And for that one, I don't really like New Year's. I think it's an anti-climax. I just go through it as any other day. But I remember at the end of the year feeling like, oh, this year I did something that I genuinely thought that I couldn't do. And that's so small and simple for everyone else. Now they really would probably hear that if I told them and be like throwing their eyes up to heaven. But for me, genuinely, like, I climbed a wall.
Yeah.
You know, and I decided at the start of the year I was going to write a list of things that I was going to achieve this year that would honour my creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was... like, I'm really, really inspired by music, obviously, and by nature, and I love the festival life, and I decided, like, that would be an ideal place for me to sell the jewellery, even though I know that no one at a festival is really running around with an extra 200 or 300 bucks, like, to spend on a piece of jewellery. Like, I just felt like they carry the same sort of energy, and, like, doesn't actually make sense when you say it out loud either. Like, it's ridiculous. But I really wanted to do it, and I thought it would be fun as well. And I had tried to get to one by Shovels and Rope. They run a festival there down, I think it's North Carolina. I tried to get into that, but apparently the vendors, they really tried to support homegrown artists, which I respect and all. So that didn't work out, and then I said, well, I'll reach out to a lot of people, and I was getting led to different emails, and then I finally someone told me about All Together Now. So, and I was just hearing one nicer thing about it after another, and I finally sorted it out that I was able to get home to it, and I did get home, and it cost me an arm and a leg, like, much more than I had originally anticipated for, even in terms of the jewellery materials that I was going to make this big collection with. And I knew too going there that it was going to be like a case of that first collection where I might see nothing out of it except from a marketing point of view.
Yeah.
And I thought that this was the time that I had to either move forward or do nothing again.
Yeah.
Because I was sort of at a stagnant point for a while.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, are you doing this or not? And fear was holding me back an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't as busy. I'd stopped advertising. It's like when I do put it up, people respond. So I thought, do you want to do this? Like, you know? And I don't know about you, but sometimes indecisiveness comes up for me in terms of, like, if I commit to this now, you know, everyone will see that I've committed to this, and I'm out here now making this kind of decision and putting myself forward, right?
Yeah.
But I've noticed like that so many Irish people, people all over, American, Irish, whatever, wherever you're from,
yeah.
Are doing it all around me.
Yeah.
And I've seen people come over here and do the most organic things, or if it's something that's already been done, doing it an organic way.
Mm-hmm.
And actually a really good example, I don't know if you know Patrick Green, he's a mm-hmm. nightclub promoter here.
He's one of the podcast guests.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it hasn't been launched yet. Well, I don't know if it will be launched by this time, but yeah.
I think he's a great example. Like, I don't know any.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really go to nightclubs.
Me either.
Yeah, you know.
Much
but,
to his dismay.
Yeah. But he is doing something that I haven't really seen done before. I don't know what
it's,
it is.
Yeah.
But it's super organic. He's doing it his own way. And
smart.
And no one would have, you know, no one would have like predicted where we go except for
mm-hmm.
him, I'm sure. But I'm watching people like that come over who are super inspiring
mm-hmm.
and it kind of brought to my attention that, you know, going into a business on your own, which
mm-hmm.
is what was holding me back
mm-hmm.
officially going into a business, because then there's chance of failure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially I found if it's got a creative underlying, because there's so much other emotional stuff that goes along with that,
yeah.
you know. But no one going into that is like emotionally metronomic.
Yeah.
You're going to have your up and down days. And
yeah.
I see it left, right and centre. And nothing, like you were saying, nothing separates us from any person. Like, why can't I do this? And
yeah.
if it doesn't work out, so what? Like, we're not defined, as you were saying in your podcast last week, like with your mum.
Yeah.
We're not defined by our personalities or life decisions. Like,
yeah.
you know, we're only here.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, we're just giving it a run, you know?
Yeah, who cares? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so really, really where it's at. And really good that, you know, you've started a business out of that. And I suppose that's what drives you. And like that it's so much deeper for you, you know? And that's really just, it's never going to be much of a struggle. Like, you know, it's always going to come from that place for you now that it's resonated with you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the goal.
It's your truth. Yeah,
yeah.
That's the goal. Yeah.
yeah,
it's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I definitely found that sometimes in terms of like what's fashionable and what's true to myself
doesn't
get skewed, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, what was your intention of making that?
Mm.
Where are you now? Like, and I'd have to come back and look at the direction I'm going in and what I actually feel truly is exciting to myself in terms of what I think should be exciting.
Yeah.
Do you get me?
Yeah, it
and
just goes back to the truth and the
So it's definitely something I this year kind of found a bit of a struggle in, but I welcome it, you know.
Yeah.
So all together now, I finally got home or whatever and I felt I'd bitten off a bit more than I could chew, right?
Yeah.
And I the night before I had said, yeah, I had had my first ever panic attack.
Yeah.
And mom and dad were upstairs and I kind of felt like, you know, I can't go up and wake them, like I'm a grown woman. Get your shit together.
Yeah.
You know, but also is somebody sitting on my chest? What the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
sort
yeah.
of a thing. And all it was that, not all it was just, I had spent 5 months like not sleeping, which is not healthy, but waking up, making these jewellery, going into work full time, coming home, making
doing
the jewellery, you know, doing the New York hustle and not taking any time to just slow down because there was no time.
Yeah.
And especially when you know that you have to like every piece in order to kind of move forward. And it was like a certain amount of pressure, and it all the night before it was kind of like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm after spending all this money, bringing all these like pieces home to Ireland to a festival where people aren't going to have the disposable. I know I'm not running around looking to spend an extra few hundred like at a festival. I'm looking at like drinking beers and running around the place like a mad thing. So I was sort of like, right, here we are, sort of a thing. And I had a different like bunch of maybe mechanisms or whatever ways to get through that or just sort of guided myself through it. And it was awful, but I woke up the next morning kind of feeling a little bit better. It was kind of I needed to address the fact that I was full of fear. And then I got there and I could not write the situations that happened. Like, I had some huge help from like a social influencer who just was a beautiful person inside and out and tried to help me. And I had 2 days before I left for Ireland from New York, I absolutely love Patti Smith. I love her so much. Like, I love her books. I love what she's about as a woman, as an artist, as a rock and roll genius. I knew that she was playing the main stage on the Saturday night, and I was like, I need to stop what I'm doing and make a piece for her.
Yeah.
So it was like 2 a.m, baking heat. You remember there a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
What it was here, and I was just like, there nothing was bothering me except making this piece for her. So I did.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's Patti Smith now when I meet her. No idea how I'd meet her, by the way. Just ludicrous. It'd be like me deciding, like, I'm gonna meet, you know, the Stones next week or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's for, I don't know, it was 35,000-40,000 people at this festival. But I just decided, like, we were gonna cross paths. And I went to the festival, whatever, had that amazing first night. Things went all wrong in the day. I didn't have my lighting set up. I was late setting up, and everything worked out in the end. It was great. And then I got like a shout out from Niamh Cullen, the social influencer. She helped me out big time. So then I don't know if it had anything to do with her, but throughout the night, all the other craft vendors were closing down. And I just got busier and busier, come like,
oh my God,
three, and these are my most expensive pieces selling. And people were staying there to listen to what I had to say. Like, they wanted to know.
Yeah.
They wanted to know, like, the story, and, you know, I would just let people at it. I wouldn't be kind of, like, putting them under pressure or anything. And they were seeking information.
Yeah.
And it was just, and then it came to the point where people were coming down to my tent just to hang out. Or two girls, they were hilarious. It was like their safe spot. Like, when they got lost, they'd be like, I'd meet you at Caroline's. You know, it was just, and it was just like a really, like, gorgeous, funny experience.
Yeah.
And then the next day, my friend, one of my friends, Linda, she came and spent the weekend with me and helped me out. And we were giggling away there in the tent, and this man passed with two kids at him and sort of double took and came back to the tent. And he said, how's it going? And I said, grand, how are you? And he was like, come here, like, are you doing any business here selling jewellery at a festival? And like, he was dead right in asking the question, but I was sort of like, all right.
Yeah. Like, did you see my tent yesterday? Did you see the queues?
Yeah. Well, like, I knew what he was getting at, you know, because I had prepared myself for it. So basically, I wasn't even under pressure going there. The one thing I wasn't under pressure for was making sales, because I knew I wouldn't, or expected that I wouldn't, maybe a certain amount. And at that point, I had already maybe doubled or maybe 2.5 times the amount I forecasted for, and that was only on the Saturday.
Right.
Or I sold that much. So he was like asking me, oh, you know, and I was sort of like, you know, things are going all right for me, you know, getting a bit defensive, like. And he's like, right, what can I do to make your business better? And I was like, honestly, I don't know what to say to you. If you could keep it going the way it is, I'd be delighted. Like, I'm happy out. I've had a really nice run of luck. And he said, come on out, cut all that bullshit out. Like, what can I do to make it better? And I was just laughing. I said, well, if you know Patti Smith, I said, I have a piece for her here. And he said, Patti Smith, is it? And I said, yeah. And thinking he'd be like, no, I'll take it. And then I looked at the kid was holding a walkie talkie with a big smile, and then I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. And he was like, my name's James Reynolds, take my number there and I'll be back in 1.5 hours. He was like, write something down, have a story, like, I don't care if you have to make it up. And I was like, I don't have to make anything up for her.
yeah.
And then he came back and it was pissing rain, and he was like, come on down along. And I was just shaking at this point. I cannot believe this is happening. In my mind, the way it was all going to work is she'd be strolling by, like, the artist and maybe pop over, and I'd be like, oh, I mean. And I was standing next to the stage, and it was an intimate gig before she went on to do the main stage.
Yeah.
And everyone in there was really, it was really quiet, and they were very respectful of being there and the opportunity to be there, because it was a super intimate gig. That she was dedicating to a man named John Reynolds, who I didn't know. I was ashamed at the time that I didn't know. He started the festival and passed away last year, and she had promised him she'd come back beforehand. I didn't know any of this, and I just knew that I was standing there kind of waiting with this paper bag with a gift for Paddy Smith.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous. And and next thing, it's pissing rain, and these people behind me were like, are you just going to jump out and verbally attack her with love? Like, what's happening here? And I was like, oh God, I do not want to meet her like that. And I don't really like care about like fame or like stuff like, but I really, really love her as a woman. I think she's just a badass. Like, so I was super excited. And I saw her pull up, and he kind of ushered me out into this private tent, and I got to chat with her for a minute, give her the piece of jewellery, explained to her what it was about.
Yeah,
and her keyboard player and guitarist was Tony Shannon. He was, I believe he plays bass, he was beside her, and so was the man who helped me, and I didn't know who he was, and he ended up afterwards coming back to meet my dad and my best friend and staying for an hour. He ended up being the person who was organising the entire festival, and was the brother of John Reynolds.
Mm.
So we've stayed in touch since, and I couldn't explain how grateful I was to him, and what a kind thing it's like to do that for me, you know what I mean? It really meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
So I was at this point just buzzing off of all to get it out, but the sale just kept going.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was just unexpected, you know? And I can't make sense of it, because, you know, it is important to know, like, you know, jewelry isn't going to save the world or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, but
it's just the journey of it.
It's the journey. Yeah. It was just a lovely, lovely experience from start to finish, and really showed me that when you do actually like take a chance on yourself, you know, that life kind of lines up. You know, it is about being in alignment then. And I actually remember standing in the tent and having this opportunity to meet her one to one, when so many people wanted to, and feeling like I didn't deserve it. And that was exactly what being out of alignment, I suppose, feels like. And I caught myself in the moment and decided to be full of gratitude instead.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was really... And then the next day, Ireland being Ireland, pissed out of the heavens, and the tent started to blow away. But at that point, it was like 5
You're
in
like,
the evening,
whatever.
And I was like,
take the tent.
Go away. Like, this
now you grab your few cans.
I want to run around and have a few cans myself with Linda and my dad. So it was great.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So before we finish up the podcast, where can people buy the jewelry, or where can they buy the jewelry? Where can they look at the jewelry?
I think it's probably, I'd recommend first of all going to Instagram to check out
your
what's
feed.
New and
okay.
the feed and the stories, because I put them up there first.
Okay.
For give people a chance to see them before they might get lost on the website.
Okay. What's your handle on Instagram?
Stickyback Bailey.
Okay, perfect.
And then the website, which you can actually access through Instagram or straight off Google or Facebook as well, is stickybackbailey.com.
Okay, amazing. Well, thank you so much. I'm just full of good energy, and I love the fact that it's just so, your story so truthful, and you know, that it's evolved to come where it is, and it's a really important journey. So I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time and just opening up. So
thank you so much for having me. I can't believe what you'd want. I'm really, really appreciative, and I've had the loveliest time.